Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctegal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We have a fine show ready for you today. But first, a small news item that tickles my fancy. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-a-tick. That's the Donna Lana Kitchen ticker tape from our news department. So here's the news item. There is a mad turkey in Washington, D.C., and no, I am not speaking, I am not speaking metaphorically at all. No, there has been a fearless wild turkey attacking walkers, joggers, and bikers on a trail in Washington, D.C. Several people have reported being chased, slammed into, clawed, and pecked in encounters with the big bird.
A male turkey.
I saw a picture of it. I thought, well, maybe one of those turkeys that got pardoned by the president. They got away. But no. It wasn't one of those white industrial birds.
It's a wild
this
turkey.
This was a wild turkey.
Strutting his
own
stuff, yeah.
Holding his own. Anyway, the plan now is to capture the turkey and relocate it. So,
because he's too aggressive. Those turkeys in Washington, D.C. What are you going to do?
A little update there about food farming advice and
wildlife in Washington, D.C.
All right, let's get to more Lana, Donna and Lana topics here. So we're going to talk about spring today and foraging wild greens. There are good things growing wild, and there are good things to eat growing wild. Yes, there are. We're going to start out with a little bit of an audio segment from an old show. We talked to an author named Ava Chin. Ava Chin wrote a book. What's the name
of the
book?
Yeah, Ava Chin lives in New York City. Funny place we would think about foraging, but she has a book which was it's delightful. Eating Wildly, Foraging for Life, Love, and the Perfect Meal, I guess, something like that. Eating Wildly is the name of the book. And if Ava Chin can forage in New York City, we certainly can do it here in Ames.
That's what our show is about today. So let's listen to a little bit about what she has to say about the wild herb motherwort.
Welcome to Ames, Ava.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
We wanted to start out saying that Lana was just in my backyard the other day, and I had just finished reading your book, which has a lot about motherwort.
Mm.
Just the name. We love the name motherwort, but I didn't realize that we were looking at my plants, and Lana goes, "You've got a lot of motherwort here." And I said, "Is that what I've been pulling out for the last 5 years? And it keeps coming back everywhere." So now I've been drinking motherwort tea madly. Thank you very much. Tell us about motherwort.
Sure, absolutely. So I've written about it for the book.
I can read a
little section from it if
and
you
I
like.
And I would say they're really pretty, too.
It's very pretty. It's a very distinct colored leaf. It's almost slightly fuzzy.
Yeah, and kind of ruffly, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a member of the mint family. It's got a square-shaped stem,
mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite plants. When you first taste it, it can be extremely bitter. Right? But it's known as being a nervine, so it's like kind of calms your nerves.
Oh, just what we need.
That's right. So if you know you're kind of a high strung type A personality, maybe you need a little bit of motherwort in your life.
Or if you're overly tired mother or grandmother.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is a section. I first discovered motherwort growing in the wild in Boulder, Colorado. I had gone on a foraging walk with their esteemed forager, Bridget Mars.
Ah.
And I was so thrilled to actually see it in the wild. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs. "The leaves were shaped like a lion's tail, and I thought about the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz combing the end of his tail between his paws. I rubbed a leaf between my fingers. The motherwort was less fuzzy than the common mallow and smelled like my grandfather's desk drawer, a repository for curios and odd mementos, pressed handkerchiefs embroidered with someone else's initials, buffalo nickels, an old extracted tooth. I'd first learned of Leonoris cardiaca from a Chinese doctor in Brooklyn who recommended it for women's issues like hormonal imbalances and spot bleeding. In Old English, wort means plant, and I loved the idea of a mothering plant that could aid my feminine issues and calm my nerves. According to David Hoffman's The Herbal Handbook, motherwort was used for menstrual conditions, as a relaxant during menopause, and as a tonic for the heart. Back then, I tried the herb in pill form and found it extremely dry and bitter. I had to drink an entire glass of water in order to get it down. Because of the taste, I had never taken it on a regular basis, and so couldn't confirm whether or not it worked. But here it was, alive and thriving in the middle of downtown Boulder. And apparently in your yard.
Yes, lots of it. Is it something I can dry also for?
Yes, how I like to take it is to dry it first and then make a tincture out of it. So you kind of...
Alcohol, glycerin?
Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
A combination of, like, your highest proof alcohol you can get your hands on. For me, that's just a...
We have plenty of white lightning here in Iowa.
You can use that, mm-hmm, and a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And you shake it. Shake it every day,
mm-hmm,
for about a month, and then you'll get a tincture. And it's a lot easier to my palate than to drink it as a tea because it is so bitter. So there's something nice about taking a shot of it.
It's not tasting bitter yet. Do you suppose it's because it's so young and fresh?
I don't know. I've had it pretty young. I found it pretty bitter. That maybe you're just, you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've been pushing the bitters because that's the underdeveloped flavor of the American palate.
Right.
And also it's very helpful in aiding digestion.
That was a talk with Ava Chin, and it was for the Donalana Kitchen Archives. We talked to her way back in 2018.
And the book was called Eating Wildly. Now, it is prime motherwort right now. In fact, motherwort is one of the first things to come up. If you see the first spot, it kind of grows in clumps, and the leaves are ruffly and beautiful, and it's... if you just want to do, it's up everywhere now, but a lot of other things are up. If you just want to get a few leaves and steep them in boiling water and just drink it like that, it couldn't be simpler. It is, as Ava Chin says, a nervine, so it's very calming, and I don't think it's that bitter.
Well, that's because you have a good palate.
I love bitters. So,
we're up for lots of things.
Yeah.
It's always nice to try new things. That's why today we're going to concentrate on trying new things and eating things that grow wild. Many of the things that are up now in the spring are not available in stores, but easy to find in the woods and in your backyard if you know where to look. I had a great experience this past week. We gathered together, and Donna, tell us about nettles. Now, this is nettles. Now, people nettles, you eat it and you boil them, fine. This, hang on to your hats, folks, this is a recipe for eating nettles raw.
Well, this is the time of year for the, quote, the good old spring tonic. You know, this is... We need to, like, cleanse and throw off the winter, and even though the weather has been, like, not as we hoped, still the green things are growing, and, I do walk daily in as much woods as I can find, and you see things are, first the motherwort came out, and the Virginia, what's the creeper thing?
Virginia waterleaf,
right, is all over the floor of the woods around in Ames.
Little speckledy leaves.
Yeah, and Lana says those are edible too.
I've eaten Virginia waterleaf, but when they're young, they're lovely.
Yeah,
violet leaves.
Yeah, some things you don't want to eat later, but when they're first out this time of year, and the point of foraging is for the thrill of it. You know, it's not like we're going to feed our whole diet of, you know, collecting herbs, although it is a good skill set to have, you know, in case of necessity or something. I mean, I imagine some of those Ukrainian grannies are out there collecting things to eat right now. Because,
I would be.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's sort of like knowing the names of the local birds or something like that. You know, it puts you it connects you to the seasons, the earth, the local, you know, everything. So, you know, going out to pick something that you then bring home and actually put into your body is, you know, it's a very special experience. I highly recommend it. And hopefully next week when we have better weather, it will be less daunting to go out into the woods. But right now is the prime time for these little tiny greens, and nettles are sprouting. So nettles, which you can eat not only when they're tiny, right?
Yeah.
You know, you can eat them. So nettles are a long time. They're just good for you. They're good for you if you have allergies. It's called stinging nettle for a reason. You don't want to pick them without gloves unless you're a glutton for punishment. I did read that nettles were an old time remedy for arthritis. If you take them in kind of whatever area is your arthritis is bothering you, and you kind of tap it with the nettles and it stings a little bit, that's supposed to relieve. So nettles have something in them called formic acid. And I wondered, I'm going to read to you from a website. It says, the trichome, it's a part of a plant anyway, has a rounded base filled with formic acid, which is the same compound that is in fire ant and bee stings. That formic acid is what causes the reaction, the burning reaction, which can be more or less pronounced according to the age of the plants and individual sensitivity. So, you know, the usual thing with nettles is you pick them with gloves, you take them home, and you cut them with a scissor. So put the scissors in your pocket before you go for a walk in the woods with a little bag to put them in. And then the usual way is to take them and blanch them in boiling water, which gets rid of the sting. But what happens when you do that is you end up, it's like spinach. You end up with a green mush.
Well, a green mush is fine and lovely, but you ran across a way to fix them that, well, it's quite nice.
Well, nettles are used, you know, in soups and all, kind of like spinach things. But so on this website, and we have talked about this man before, it's called The Forager Chef. His name is Alan Bergo, B-E-R-G-O. And he does send out a newsletter, which I would highly recommend, free to sign up for. So he's got this stinging nettle recipe for this week, which Lana and I prepared. And what he does is it's how to eat them raw, which I had never seen before, because, you know, you don't want to pick, it's not something you want to pick in the woods and stick in your mouth and chomp on it to see how it tastes. It does stick.
Right.
I mean, it's not terrible. It's not like getting a bee sting, but it you notice it. Like, if you're walking through the nettle patch and you don't have socks on, you'll feel it kind of nipping at your ankle. So,
and this reaction does not last forever, but it's there.
No, it's not as bad as a bee sting at all. Right. And Lana has a patch out in her garden.
It's not intentional, but it's handy because I have a friend that really likes nettles, and he actually picks them without anything on his hand, but that he's a tough guy. and then he boils them, so I have a handy patch of nettles, and I can't say that I would encourage you to grow nettles, because you can find them just about any place. Actually, they're growing underneath a pear tree, which is a fine place for them,
and they kind of grow at the edge of the forest because they need a little sun.
Mm-hmm.
And in, as they say, disturbed areas.
Yes, very good.
You know, so the beauty of this recipe that Lana and I did on Sunday is it's raw nettles.
Can you
how to eat the raw nettles? Because obviously, if you steam them or if you blanch them, you're going to lose some of the nutritive value. And that's true of any greens. So that's why we eat salads. But you don't want to just put these nettles into the salad bowl, right? So here's what Alan Burgo does. And it wasn't as hard as I thought. You pick them with your gloves on, then you put them in a little cold water to get all the sand and stuff off, and then strain them and kind of pat them dry a little bit. And then you put them like on the, you know, on the countertop.
Still using gloves.
Yeah.
If you'd like to.
Yeah.
I have a pack of thin gloves that I use when I'm de-seeding peppers, you know, that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, right. So I put some of Lana's gloves on. And then here's the trick. Once you've got them cleaned and spread out on the countertop, you get the rolling pin out and you crush them. You just roll the rolling pin back and forth and then, you know, kind of fluff them around and roll it again, because these little sacs on the leaves that contain the formic acid, if you crush them, it goes away. Now, I don't know where it goes. Maybe it's a volatile. I don't really know. But
it's true, because I saw Donna rolling this stuff out, and she bravely picked up a squashed piece and tasted it, and then I did too, and, oh, there's
no
sting.
The sting was gone.
There's no
sting.
Yeah,
well, and in the website where he talks about it, he says at some point he takes a taste to see if he's rolled it enough. And in his instance, he had to roll some more. But for ours, I had obviously rolled it enough. And then you cut it into a chiffonade, which is just like, you do this with basil or other large leaves. It's like a rough chop. You know, you don't want it too fine. But then you've got the basis for your salad. So he gives a recipe, which I, of course, only followed loosely. He puts in chopped, it's a crunchy salad, and it's a traditional Middle Eastern salad.
Ah.
So, and nettles, I know, are used a lot in Turkish cooking and other places.
The name of this recipe on the Forager Chef website is Turkish Nettle Salad. Ooh, okay.
There we go. Right. He puts in cucumbers and tomato, which is very typical for, and feta cheese, right? So, I'm not ready to eat tomatoes this time of year. They don't taste very good. And cucumbers, this sounds too summery for me. But he did say variations, like most traditional foods, there are different dance partners you might see being used. It is a chunky salad. He put mint in it, which I did do. And feta. Here are some other things he recommended. Sumac powder, grated tomatoes, a dressing of mustard and oil, or just your favorite dressing, onions, especially scallions, and pomegranate seeds. So what we did, because this is what I had in my fridge, we did do the feta cheese, which was delicious with it. We did some scallions. We did some sumac powder, which gives it a little brightness. And I didn't have pomegranate seeds, of course.
And
but
you put in mint.
Oh, mint. Yes, we did put in fresh mint. And then I used pomegranate molasses, which was given to me, directly carried from Turkey by my friend Başak. And her mother, I think, made it or brought it or something. So that, and olive oil and salt, right? And we just mixed it up. And what'd you think, Lana?
This was a great salad. Okay, I got over my fear of eating a raw nettle because Donna did such a fine job of crushing it. What this did was give a really nice tooth, because mm-hmm. Nettles are a little fuzzy, or as opposed to mushy stuff. This was good, hearty, toothy kind of greenness to eat, and it was lovely, especially the feta and the pomegranate.
Yeah,
taste.
How bad could it be, right? Right. It was delicious, and we felt so virtuous.
Well, it was good.
it was really good, and it was this, you know, it's part of our spring cleaning. We're just tuning up here with this foraging bit.
We are, and getting back to your comment about nettles being a food that people have used for many, many
ancient. Yeah.
I get a lot of my understanding of history from old folk songs, and I don't know where this came from, but in my brain, there's a bunch of old folk songs about the women that were part of the spinning and weaving trades, where they got paid nothing, in English mills and New England mills in the United States, the mill girls, the cotton mill girls that were spinning the cotton into fabric, and they had a pretty hard life, and there were some interesting songs about that way of life, and some of them were actually protest songs in their very nice very nice way. They would be protest songs, but I remember one of the lines in one of the songs, they were talking about, we had a pretty hard life. They didn't have much time off and didn't get paid very well, and they didn't have much to wear, even though they were making cloth. And one of the lines said, and nettles were the best of our food when the spring came around. We got to go out and we got to eat nettles, and they were the best of the food. So that kind of puts things in perspective there. So heads off to nettles.
Well, nettles do grow in a lot of places all over the world. I mean, if you're having them in Turkey, and you're having them in New England, and you're having them in the upper Midwest, they're a very common plant.
Yes. Oh, and believe it or not, the plant itself, besides being a traditional medicine, a traditional food, and you make tea out of it, the stems can provide a basis for making textiles and rope.
Oh, right. It's fiber. Not probably as widely used as hemp, but it does work.
I don't think I'll be doing that.
No.
Kind of nice to put in the back of your mind that there it is. See, we have a lot to gain and a lot to learn from the things that grow wild.
So once again, this chef, Alan Bergo, B-E-R-G-O, he also has a book called The Forager Chef's Book of Flora, which has its recipes and techniques for edible plants from garden, field, and forest. We really like him.
Yeah, and
we should put on our Facebook page a link to his website.
Do that sort of thing.
Somebody should be able to figure
that out
for us.
Yeah. So the website. How do you find the website? Just go
to Facebook.
Facebook.
We have a Facebook page.
Oh.
Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna Lana is one word. D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A. Donna Lana Kitchen. Facebook.
We're coming right along,
oh boy,
folks.
Yeah. We
come
so happening.
We come to you many different ways. Yes, we do. And right now I'd like to mention that you're listening to us on KHOI Community Radio. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about eating wild greens today. And, oh, we have talked about nettles. I've got a few more things to say about nettles.
It's the season for green.
Oh, goodness. It has influenced our language across cultures. In the German language, the idiom, there's an idiom that says to sit in the nettles means to be in trouble. In the Hungarian language, they say a thunderbolt does not strike the nettles, meaning that bad people always get away with all their deviltry. And the same idiom exists in the Serbian language, that the thunderbolt does not strike the nettle. The Dutch language has an idiom that says, don't push granny into the nettles, like don't stir up trouble. Okay. and the English language, too, to nettle, or the word nettled means irritated or angry.
That's true,
not
right?
Good, huh? Yeah, very good. Oh, get this. All this strange stuff you can find on the internet. In the indigenous justice systems in Ecuador, a punishment for severe crimes, including being flogged with stinging nettles in public, naked, whilst being showered with freezing cold water.
It's better than being tar and feathered.
I think so. Like you said,
I'll take the nettles.
Okay. Yeah. It could be worse, as they say. Yes. But there's lots of different things we can eat this time of year. And I'm not saying you should go out and taste everything in the woods, but kind of look this stuff up. There's a lot of information.
Right, because there's nothing in the garden yet.
Not quite, except, well, chives.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, and the wild garlic chives, which grow everywhere around Ames.
Yeah, and I've got lovage just coming up enough to snap a top off. Mm-hmm. So now we've got something to eat out there. But there's things that are kind of in the garden or just on the edge of the garden. The sorrels will be up soon. The sorrels.
Now, are they the perennials?
They come up from a wonderful hardy root. Yes, uh-huh, they do. Uh-huh. So if you planted a sorrel last year, I hope you did not pull it up because it gets even better the second year. Like lovage. If you planted a lovage last year, don't pull it up because it's coming up again. These things come up from a perennial root and they also seed. There's dandelions doing soon, and there's wild fennel and sweet Sicily.
What does sweet Sicily look like?
It's very much a woodland thing.
What do you do with it?
It is a sweet sort of thing that uses an herb. I suppose you'd make a tea out of it.
Can you throw these into a green salad?
Oh, I think you could.
And what was the other Virginia water lily?
Virginia water leaf.
Water leaf. Okay, it's everywhere.
Yeah, that is pretty easy to find.
And you should pick the tinier leaves, right?
Tinier leaves, okay. Along with violets.
I did see violets.
Again.
Poking up.
Yep. Do eat. When the wild violets come up and kind of turn into something looking like a violet out in the woods, you know, a foot tall or so, then's the time to start looking for wild mushrooms. I haven't found any yet. They seem
is good with the mushrooms. I'm not cognizant enough of which ones are the good ones and the bad ones, so I don't pick them. It's something you need to know what you're doing. And I suppose the same thing is true with foraging. However, it's pretty hard to pick a green leaf around here that would kill you or make you hallucinate.
Don't eat nettles.
Well.
Unless you squash them first.
Yeah.
Don't eat poison ivy.
Oh, right.
Be careful. But there's...
There is an old wives' thing, which is not to discredit it, because actually when my son was young and we lived in California, we don't have poison ivy there, but we have poison oak, which is really similar. And he seemed to be really sensitive to it, right? So we actually did this where he ate a tiny little bit of the plant itself, and then he seemed to be less sensitive to it.
I've heard of that, but I'm
Be careful, and I'm not advising it. But this is just an old wives' tale. Excuse me, but you know, it's like such stories I have heard and experienced.
It's,
okay,
it's like yes. It's like get a lot of bee stings, and then you won't notice them after a while.
That or you'll become anaphylactic if you get too many. So
yes,
something like
goodness,
that.
Goodness. Sorrels are a thing that I've been growing in the garden. I haven't found them wild, but they do come up year after year. And there's a regular French sorrel or common French sorrel, smaller leaf, bigger leaf, common garden sorrel, a long spade shape leaf that is really handy, and it's very I don't want to say it's lemony, but it's kind of...
Well, that's how it's usually described.
Yeah,
it's lemony.
The
classic French sorrel soup, you know, where you do the same thing that you would, like we were talking about the nettles, where you blanch it and it turns into a...
It turns into mush, but it leaves a very nice taste behind.
Yes, it does at least taste really good. And it does taste lemony. Like I've used them in a... Like if you take a... chicken broth and cook sorrel in it. And
good
maybe
idea.
You could make almost like an egg drop and sorrel and chicken soup kind of thing like that. It loses its color and it does turn kind of gray and unremarkable, but it is good.
Very good.
It has a very bright flavor even when you cook it.
Very good. Sorrel, a good thing. A good thing. And I've run across something that I've added to my garden. Again, a perennial hardy thing that comes up from a root. It doesn't grow as tall as regular sorrel, but there is something called blood-veined sorrel, which
oh, that's the red one. It's pretty.
It's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound very, it could be good, blood-veined sorrel, but it is a sorrel with dark red veins and edges, and that is very pretty too. A handy thing to add raw to a salad or mm-hmm. throw it in. It's good. It's good.
It's true. The sorrel is nice raw in a salad because it retains that lemon flavor. And if you're getting, you know, mixed greens and then you get a bite of the lemon flavor, it's delightful.
It is. It is.
So grab a plant and put it in your garden.
Yeah. Oh, those are good. And later in the summer. Other things will be coming up. Purslane in the garden and lamb's quarters in the garden.
They're wild and kind of everywhere around
here. And everything. Oh, yeah. And one of those plants that grow in disturbed areas. And so there they come. And we should, I remember a friend, when I was first starting a garden, pointed out to a so-called weed in my garden, and she called it the dreaded purslane. So I thought dreaded was part of the name, the dreaded purslane. It is a low-growing succulent.
And it spreads all over,
It spreads all over the place. It's easy to pull out, and it's actually another crunchy, lemony, good thing.
Right. If you do harvest the purslane, it is a little bit tedious. It has little, small, round, succulent leaves that you pluck them individually off the stem and throw them into the salad.
It's good.
You could probably stir fry it too. Now, purslane, doesn't it have something that is, what is it? It has some quality of nutrition that is very rare in the vegetable world. Maybe it's, I'm not going to say, or even guess because I'll be wrong. I just know that it has something that you hardly ever see in a vegetable.
Iron?
No, because that's common in vegetables. I don't quite remember. Just eat your purslane. It's really good for you. Maybe it's the omegas or no, I can't remember what it is. B12, something weird that vegans don't get enough of. So purslane is good for you. That's all I know. And it grows everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to pick it, and it's tedious to pluck the leaves off.
But it's nice to know that most stuff is edible.
Well, and the lamb's quarters that you mentioned, those kind of go all summer and mm-hmm. pop up all over, and those cook up kind of very similar to spinach.
Now, that is a good thing. I mean, as opposed to, for me, for the taste of it, nettles cook down to mush, and tastes like not much, but when lamb's quarters is quite nice and very abundant and a good thing.
Yeah, some people, you can substitute it for spinach in almost anything. But of course, like spinach, once you cook it, you know, you think you have this huge pile of spinach or this huge pile of lamb's quarters and you cook it down and it becomes like, you know, a fifth or a tenth of the volume that you had to begin with. But
so go ahead and gather lots. That's what's kind of nice about wild gathering, because you can usually gather lots.
Well, there is the thing, the rule about foraging, right?
Yes.
Okay, if you're in the woods, do not pick everything.
No.
Always leave enough that it can regenerate itself.
Yes, and you have to leave some for the fairies, or you're going to be in trouble. So, yes.
The fairies will throw you in the stinging nettle patch if you're
not
careful.
That's it. So, especially, I'm thinking of that, too. Another thing that is wild foraging material this kind of time of year is ramps.
Yes.
And that's something you really should pick, not sparingly, but
judiciously.
Judiciously, because it comes up from a little bulb, and you find it in a burst of green leaves. It sort of looks like hostas coming up.
Yeah, it is ramp season right now. I have had some ramp sightings. Lana has picked some ramps. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's like mushrooms. You don't tell anybody where your spot is because they are in hot demand. Now, here's what I've been doing with the ramps. You know, traditionally, because it is in the onion family, it has a nice little bulb on it, and people do dig them up, and they love the bulbs. But you know what? The leaves are really, really good. So in my spot, because there are not lots and lots and lots of them, for several years, I have only been picking some of the leaves. I do not touch the bulbs because I want them to keep growing and I want them to keep spreading. But the leaves make wonderful all kinds of things. You can just chop them up or you can cook with them or actually that the Alan Burgo guy on his, he fermented them in some kind of soy sauce thing and made which I'm going to try while we've got the good ramps. So we will let you know how that goes. That was in one of his past newsletters as well.
Very good. I've noticed this year, walking in the woods and seeing who else is out there in the woods with me. I know the deer must be eating the ramps this year because I go along and there's a ramp and it's chomped off. And I wouldn't.
Well, you have a lot of. When we were out picking nettles the other day in the woods, we saw off in the distance from Lana's deck, I don't know, 8 to 10 deers galloping through the woods. So she's got a lot of them down there.
A gallop, gallop, galop, and frisk this time of year. There's plenty of deer where I live. And they should be tasty. They're eating the ramps. Yes, they are. Here's another thing I want to mention. I've grown this in the past, and I don't know if it's native here or not. It says it's pretty easy to find. It is a wild green, a wild herb called Good King Henry. I've grown this in the past.
I have never heard of that one.
It is a spinach substitute. It actually, the leaves are very good. It kind of a spade-shaped leaf. It looks like a spinach leaf after the spinach is bolted. So it's more of a pointy leaf.
Is it in the spinach family?
The Latin name is Chinodipodiacea. So whatever chinodipodias are, I don't know what that means.
So are you growing that in your garden or it grows wild or both?
I've grown it in my garden way back before I knew how to forage for anything. So now that I've read this, I will go look for it. Good King Henry, and I'm reading from a book called The Complete Book of Herbs, A Practical Guide to Growing and Using Herbs. It's got a lot of good pictures. Good King Henry was most popular herb from Neolithic times until the last century. Its curious name is not taken from the English King Henry III, but rather from Germany. So he really was a good King Henry from Germany, not the guy with the beheading history. Both Good King Henry, and it's also called Fat Hen, believe it or not.
Oh, now that I have heard of, Fat Hen.
It puts out quite a hefty seed head. Both of them, that's what they're called, have nutritious leaves, and the seeds of Fat Hen, which are rich in fat and albumin, were a food supplement for primitive man, and Fat Hen was found in the stomach of preserved Iron Age Toland man, and one thing about this is that it's called Fat Hen because people would feed it to their hens, Very good. And I remember eating the leaves, and the leaves are quite tasty. I have found the seeds for this in some seed catalogs. Look in these. In the herb category.
Good King Henry.
It's nice. Yes. It is a hardy perennial too because it seeds like crazy. It grows about 2 feet tall.
It's a big one.
Not a bad plant to have around. Not at all. Good. So we like to try new things.
Oh, we didn't mention burdock.
Let's talk
burdock. There is ubiquitous amounts of burdock right now. They're small. And you eat the root.
Yeah. I don't think it had a leaf. Yeah. The root.
The root. It looks like a baby rhubarb plant, kind of, you mm-hmm. know, but you see them growing everywhere. I was out on one of my daily walks and a nice young man was riding by on a bicycle and he had a basket and a little shovel. And I said to him, "What are you after?" "The burdock roots, because now we've had some rain, so it's real easy to dig them, and there's plenty, so you can dig up the roots. They do have medicinal qualities, rather like dandelion leaves."
Ha! Yeah, I don't think I've ever just plain eaten a burdock root
because I was bitter
hungry.
Too.
That's okay, yeah. There you go, another one of your bitters. Okay, very good. Yeah. We're talking about wild greens. Good things to try. And like I said, don't just go out and start chomping on things. Kind of do your research. But Donna, you talk about eating little bits. And if it doesn't kill you, we eat a little bit more. And yeah, I mean, tasting things. People have survived because we've tasted things and tried to see what happens.
Well, this is a personal story. I'm not recommending it. But when I see something in the woods that I don't know what it is, I take a little tiny pinch of the leaf and chew on it just to see if it has a flavor that I like or if it feels edible. And if it's yucky, you just spit it out. And no harm has ever come to me from this, but that is one way to learn, and that is probably the way our ancestors learned. I mean, way back in the Neolithic, you know, you eat something and you find out. If you don't drop dead, it must be good for you, right?
And here we've come all this way, and here we are on the Donna Lana Kitchen to tell the tale. Yes, it is. This is KHOI Community Radio. For more information about the Donna Lana Kitchen and this fine community radio station, go to khoifm.org. Was some music by the Barn Owl Band. We've been talking about eating wild greens, some good stuff that you can find if you know where to look. And it's funny, once you started to harvest from the world around you, it just may make you a little more cognizant of how things grow and who's in the neighborhood. And
you know, there's a caveat we forgot.
What?
If you're picking from a wild place, try to find places that you think have not been sprayed with herbicides and pesticides. That, you know, some parks, things are sprayed. Some, you know, some lawns, certainly, you know, and this is particularly true of dandelions, for goodness sake. People are always trying to get rid of them and put noxious things onto them that you do not want to eat. So when you are picking, kind of be logical about, you know, be careful.
Right. Pesticides. Oh, that's to get rid of pests.
And herbicides, mostly.
And herbicides.
Yeah,
remember,
right.
We are part of the organic community, too, and I don't think the pesticides and herbicides draw the line when it comes
right. If
to
if it's going to kill the plant, it might not be good for us
Very good. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to the growing season. My onions are kind of looking like onions, and garlic is up, and I put in a few things like early lettuce and some radishes, and Now we're just looking for some sunshine to get him to go along.
Yes, at least all of the green carpeting is out in the woods, and most people's lawns have turned green. Now the trees are way behind, but it is kind of, there's a green floor right now.
There is hope. There is hope. And when we think of spring and think of the garden, there are folks out there that are growing food for us. There are vegetable farmers. Probably you don't even know where they are. They're around where you are living right now, and you can find them at farmers markets. Farmers markets are a very good invention.
And a lot of them are starting this weekend.
A lot of them are starting this weekend, or check with your local chamber of commerce, because all of a sudden the farmers markets are not just about farmers anymore, but towns and chambers of commerce folks are perking up and realizing that people like to gather and talk about food and buy things and stroll around. And farmers markets are a really fine community event. So we talked to a vegetable farmer, and Kate Sloco. She has a farm called Root to Rise Farm. And she also has the CSA, and she prepares things for farmers markets, too. And let's go to a little bit of audio here about Kate Solko and how she's growing food for us all. We welcome Kate Solko to our kitchen table. She is from Root to Rise Farm here in Ames, Iowa. You may know her from the farmer's market. She has a CSA. Welcome to our table, Kate.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So, Kate, your farm is a relatively new one to this area, and you've been going great guns. Tell us about what you do, and tell us about Root to Rise Farm.
We're located on the property of Alluvial Brewing, and right next to Prairie Moon Winery. I manage about 5.5 acres of certified organic land. We grow food for the Ames area. We don't ship food anywhere. I rarely even sell food in Des Moines. I think it's really important to grow food for the people right around me.
Yeah, that's good. We can eat food here. That's good. I assume that, tell us more about how the CSA works.
Yeah, so a CSA, CSA stands, it's an acronym. It stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And it's a way for farmers to connect with their community that's mutually beneficial, I think. The customers help share some of the risks and also the rewards of farming. They purchase shares, we call them, in the spring, and that income in the spring helps to buy seed, helps to buy fertilizer, helps to supply me as a farmer with the income or the input I need in the spring. And then for 20 weeks throughout the season, customers come and pick. We do market style, so they come and pick out each item, sometimes take more of things that they really enjoy or leave things for other members or to be donated that they wouldn't necessarily use. So they come and pick up a box of veggies or a bag of veggies, and also we partner with a couple other local producers. So we do add-ons. We do a cheese add-on with Lost Lake Cheese, and we do a bread add-on that is optional through Arcadia, through Liz at Arcadia.
Oh, that's great. So there's a lot you can get from your CSA. It's 5.5 acres. How many people are served by your CSA? How many people?
This year we have 52 members, in addition to working the farmer's market and hoping to take a fair amount of produce to the farmer's market.
Oh, good. I have a note here to talk about challenges and pleasures, and you mentioned that farmer's market is one of your pleasures. Talk about farmer's market.
Yes, I love farmers market. I love working the farmers market. To me, it's really, really important to connect with the consumer, to connect with the people who are eating the food, the families, the kids, you know, so that they really know who's growing their food, so that they understand maybe how to use things that aren't familiar to them. And so they really understand, you know, some of the things, some of the struggles and the great, beautiful things that are happening on the farm. And farmers market and being present at CSA Pickup as well really helped me to do that. So I, you know, I love waking up early and spending time making my display really pretty. And I love connecting with individual customers and, you know, giving them ideas about how they might use things or cook things that they're curious.
Good. You remembered the wake up early part. What are your Saturday mornings like? How early do you get up to load the truck, et cetera?
Well, I have to say, now that I'm working, I used to work the Des Moines Farmers Market, and now that I'm working the Ames Farmers Market, I have to get up a lot less early. But which is great. Early is good. Really early is you know, 3 is a little excessive. So usually I get up about 5, and I head out to the farm. This time of year, the first thing I do in the morning is harvest herbs. I always harvest my herbs the morning of market. I think it's really important for quality and flavor. And then I start loading things that were harvested the day before, you know, a little more stable items that we harvested the day before, my little trailer, actually, my little Subaru, my little trailer, and haul them to market. And you know, I spend time making sure the tablecloth is straight and thinking about how things are organized on the table and where the colors are distributed and things like that. Yeah. And then usually right about the time I'm writing price tags on the signs, they'll start showing up. So, yeah.
Well, you know, your display at the market, this is the downtown Saturday morning Ames Farmers Market, is really, really lovely and always very attractive.
Welcome back. This is Adana Lana Kitchen. That was Kate Solko talking about getting ready for Farmers Market. Yes, it is time. I want to mention that Ames Main Street Farmers Market will open Saturday, May 7th. Their hours are from 8 o'clock to 12:30. There are lots of smiling faces willing to sell you things and greet you of a Saturday morning.
Also, this coming Saturday morning, Lon and I will be making an appearance at Early Morning Harvest in Panora, Iowa. We will be doing a demo on making your own salad dressings and cooking with fresh herbs. So go to the Early Morning Harvest website, and if you in the sort of little more western part of Iowa near Panora, come on out and see us at the Early Morning Harvest. They have a new store on the farm.
Oh.
And Early Morning Harvest is, of course, where we love to buy all of our flours. They have a mill. The Hafner family, Earl, the patriarch of the family, I say Earl has a frog in every pocket. He is always doing something, and his son Jeff, the same. So that's this coming Saturday in Panora, Iowa at Early Morning Harvest.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Also, like to mention that Donalana Kitchen is available on podcast now.
Yes, we now have a podcast. So the same things that you hear on radio, if you would prefer the podcast form, you just go to wherever you listen to podcasts and type in Donalana Kitchen. That's Donalana, one word, kitchen.
We're there, and we're learning new things. Yes, we are. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for lending us your ears. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You hear us live here on the radio Tuesdays at noon and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. We're repeated. You can find out more about us and the show at khoifm.org. Support this fine community radio station. And get out there and enjoy spring and some greens. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We'd have had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.